Welcome to the Hirschfeld Century Podcast. I'm Catherine Eastman, the Archives Manager for the Al Hirschfeld Foundation.
And I'm David Leopold, the Creative Director. And today we're talking about...
My Fair Lady.
Uh-huh. My Fair Lady. On the marquee of the show before it closed was the world's greatest musical. Now, those are fighting words for those of us who like musicals. But arguably, it might be the world's greatest musical.
It's a great one.
I think a lot of people know the score.
Yeah. Oh, no, definitely. Definitely. It's definitely made its mark.
And they know the score in part because of the cast album. The album has a distinctive piece of album art. It is the cover by Al Hirschfeld.
Yes, it is. Very famous. Very famous.
Most people really know the show. They're almost picture of the show is the Hirschfeld drawing of
right. No, definitely.
And immortalized in 1994 in a play by Paul Rudnick called Jeffrey, where the priest says to Jeffrey, I know where you got your idea of God, where most people get it, from the cover of the original cast album of My Fair Lady. You thought Shaw, who was working these marionettes of Rex Harrison and Julie Andrews, was God, as did Shaw, I believe. Now, I've paraphrased Mr. Rudnick, and yes. I apologize to him. I don't have the script in front of me.
I think that was the gist of it.
Yes.
Yes. Me and what he's meant to say is this is a very significant piece of album artwork. So.
And kids, for those who grew up in a time before they had lots of visual options to look at, you know, when you played a record, you looked at the album cover because that was the only thing to look at.
Yep.
And we studied them. I mean, I remember reading every word on an album cover and really looking at it. And those LPs were such an important part. Oddly enough, if it was up to Hirschfeld, he never would have drawn that.
Really? Why not?
Oh, well, this goes back. You have to start at the beginning, which is...
Which beginning, David? There's many beginnings.
Oh, on the sixth day. No, George Bernard Shaw wrote a play called Pygmalion based on a myth about an artist who sort of falls in love with a piece of a sculpture that he created.
Oh, interesting. Isn't there a famous painting of that?
Oh, there's many. There's many, many famous paintings.
I'll have to find that and I'll put it in the album or the album notes. We're talking about albums.
Yeah, right.
In the show notes, I'll post that drawing.
No, it's been a regular theme. It's shown up in paintings for a very long time. And Shaw wrote a wonderful play called Pygmalion that features all the characters we know and love, Henry Higgins and Eliza Doolittle. He changed the focus somewhat and made it a really sort of women empowerment story.
Oh, interesting.
Although the original myth is, you know, they didn't talk much about women, female empowerment in myths, but certainly he did. And very popular play. Many producers wanted to film it over the years. Shaw resisted. He thought that what film adaptations of his work had been made, he was very unhappy with. Finally, producer Gabriel Pascal convinced him to do it and asked him to contribute to the script, which I believe he won an Academy Award for.
Oh, nice, nice.
When that film came out, released by MGM in 1938, they asked an artist we know and love, Al Hirschfeld, to create the posters for the film.
And there are quite a few posters.
Oh, there's at least four. Actually, five posters. There are four vertical posters and one 24 sheet.
Right.
That is actually the first time Hirschfeld used an image of Shaw working marionettes of the characters.
Oh, that's where that starts.
Yes, that's exactly where it starts.
Interesting.
And that starts because Shaw is literally, if you have ever seen a George Bernard Shaw script, there are tons of stage directions. He is literally moving the characters around the stage, manipulating what they say and do. Any playwright, I suppose, does that.
Right.
Shaw was a master of it.
Oh, interesting. I did not know that.
That's what we have this podcast for.
So the film comes out in 1938, and I read that the famous The Rain in Spain stays mainly plain. That wasn't actually in the original play. That
Correct.
Was added during the movie. So that's just a fun fact for you, my contribution over here.
The success of the film actually, and which not only introduced the reign in Spain, mm-hmm. but actually gave the play a happy ending.
Oh, interesting.
In the original play, Eliza does not stay with Henry Higgins.
Aww,
And in fact, as I said, it's a story of female empowerment to a great extent. And in the original play, she leaves, and he actually appends a 6.5-page epilogue trying to explain to audiences who he understood would be disappointed that Eliza doesn't stay with Henry Higgins, about why she wouldn't. You know, that she liked Freddie and the Colonel much more than she liked, and she really didn't like Henry Higgins and Mr. Doolittle.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, MGM, Hollywood, 1938, was going to take nothing less than a happy ending.
Of course, no, definitely.
But it made it actually a more attractive property. And Pascal would actually go on to make two other films of Shaw plays. Neither one of them was as successful as Pygmalion. But the idea of turning Pygmalion into a musical started to come to the fore. After the success of South Pacific, Mary Martin came to Rodgers and Hammerstein and asked if they would adapt it for her. And they couldn't.
Oh, interesting.
Cole Porter thought about it and realized he couldn't write English lyrics. Frank Lesser, or even Irving Berlin.
Oh, wow. So a lot of big-time names wanted this for a musical.
Sure. Irving Berlin would later say that My Fair Lady was not an important book musical because he said, I could have danced all night. You could put that in almost any show.
That's true.
I think he was a little jealous.
Yeah, yeah. Sounds like it.
Nothing against Mr. Berlin. Wrote some very fine songs.
Sure.
And great shows. But he had an aversion to the book musical.
Gotcha. Well, we all know it becomes a musical. Pygmalion becomes My Fair Lady in 1956.
Well, and Hirschfeld also has a small role in it. He tried to convince Moss Hart, the original director of the musical, to not do it. He did not think that you could improve Pygmalion with songs and dances. And in fact, I found a really wonderful quote of his. "I tried to dissuade Moss from embarking on the foolhardy project of turning Shaw's Pygmalion into a Broadway musical. I couldn't for the life of me imagine anyone adding songs and lyrics to Shaw's masterpiece. Besides, it's axiomatic in the theater that when you name something My Fair Lady, the critics are going to lambast you simply for the chance to play with your title in their headline. My Fair to Poor Lady. No Fair Lady. Fare Thee Well Lady. And, of course, as usual, I was proven absolutely right. The show was an absolute disaster, as have been the dozens and dozens of revivals since." As usual, that's as wonderful as that quote is, Hirschfeld actually reduced it to even a shorter two lines. In his book, American Theater as Seen by Hirschfeld, when he reproduced the drawing, "The foolhardy task of adapting G.B. Shaw's Pygmalion into a musical was attempted by Lerner and Lowe. Moss Hart tried to stage it. Three British actors were engaged, Stanley Holloway, Julie Andrews, and Rex Harrison. It turned into the, quote, American, unquote, classic My Fair Lady."
I think it should have said, I think if he really wanted to be snarky about it, he should have wrote the American, quote, classic, unquote, My Fair Lady.
Oh, Hirschfeld had a great sense of humor about, you know, people would ask him oftentimes, you see shows on the road.
Right.
I think we talked about
it. Well, this reminds me of the Oklahoma opening.
Exactly.
Yeah.
People think that Hirschfeld was sitting there deciding if the show was good, bad, or anything. And that's not what he was at the show for.
He wasn't a critic.
He wasn't a critic.
Yeah.
Now, when he went to opening night, he was much more conscious of the show and looking at it. Right. But he also understood that what he liked, other people might not like.
Right.
You know, he was open to all experiences.
Yeah, that's good. That's how it should be.
Yes.
Very good.
So after trying to convince Moss Hart, he stayed up till 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, my gosh. They were obviously friends.
Oh, they were friends. They were all old friends. And he stayed up till 4 o'clock in the morning trying to convince Moss not to do it.
No.
Now, Moss was a really important figure in the making of My Fair Lady. Although it is Lerner and Lowe's masterpiece, Moss really wrote or rewrote the book. uncredited. Didn't feel that he was just doing his job, he felt. Mm. But he really rewrote that book. And he was a crucial player in bringing it to the stage. Mm. And in fact, Lerner and Lowe's two greatest musicals are this and Camelot, both of which Moss directed.
Oh.
So, ironically, after Hirschfeld tries to convince Moss not to do it, the producers come to Hirschfeld and ask him to create the show art.
Oh, no.
Which they would use in all the...
And did he have anything to say about that?
Well, it was a drawing.
Okay. I wasn't sure if he was like, fine, if you pay me, I'll do it, but it's not going to be a hit.
you always had to pay him, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the whole thing. Mm-hmm. He didn't... I can only think of one time in his whole career where he turned down an assignment.
Oh, right.
That was in 1987.
Musical. Yeah. It was a musical about... What?
Oh, it was Starlight Express.
But what was it about vampires?
Or No.
What was it about?
It was this crazy show of trains, and all the actors were on roller skates, and it was a totally... I tell the story in the Hirschfeld Century book. But Hirschfeld went and came back and said, I'm not drawing that.
Oh, wow.
And he actually turned out to be pretty smart. The show didn't last, although it had been a big hit in England.
Oh, no.
So he got this assignment. Now, Hirschfeld had made some pretty wonderful posters for Pygmalion. In addition to that 24 sheet that I told you about,
right.
He did four other posters. One has Shaw wearing a sandwich board that has all the information in it. There's a great one of Shakespeare and Shaw doing almost an acrobatic act.
Yes, yeah.
Balancing act.
Yeah.
Shaw had famously said that he stood on the shoulders of Shakespeare. Mm. So Hirschfeld drew that as well. There's another of Shaw doing a self-portrait, but he's, you know, you see him as the artist and as the subject, and he seems very sort of demure. You know, he's standing there in the nude with like a fig leaf.
Oh my gosh, and, that's funny.
He's blushing.
Yes.
So they were great. They were fun shows. And actually, when he did lots of other artwork for it. We have pictures, and we'll try to put them up on the website, of the installation at the Astor Theater.
Yes, it was huge.
Incredible. It was stories high, and then you went to the theater. You could not turn anywhere in the theater lobby and not see a Hirschfeld drawing of some part of Pygmalion show art.
Mm-hmm.
So he was very familiar. It was the first time he had drawn Pygmalion, actually. Mm. And he would go on to draw a number of revivals over the years on Broadway, but this was the first time he drew it. And so he had a very good sense of who Shaw was. Mm-hmm. And even if this was a musical adaptation of Shaw, he knew that Shaw was at the controls.
Right, right. He knew it was the same thing.
So he had them as marionettes, Rex Harrison and Julie Andrews.
Right, just like he did for the movie.
Yes. Exactly. Just like he did it for the movie. And what's so amazing about that artwork, and I love it because not only is it a great drawing, I always love where Hirschfeld hides his signature.
Yes.
Sometimes it's right there.
But, yeah.
Here it's in the fringes of her scarf.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So great.
It's very sweet.
Yeah.
Very sweet.
He would actually recreate that image as part of a mural at the Playbill restaurant at the Hotel Manhattan in 1958.
Oh, interesting.
He did a mural of Shaw and Rex Harrison and Julie Andrews, like they were on the poster. One of Shakespeare working his characters, which were, in this case, were Lautner Fontaine and Taming of the Shrew, which had been a big show in the 30s. And then he had Eugene O'Neill.
Yeah.
Working the characters from Long Day's Journey into Night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very famous one. And he also did a more generic version.
Yes.
Down the road. While the original one he did was Rex Harrison and Julie Andrews, he did a poster of the same drawing, but it was not Rex Harrison and Julie Andrews. It was just a man and a woman.
Right.
So that it could be used on tour or, you know, different theaters that are putting on the show.
And it's frequently seen today.
Right.
If
still
you see
used.
A production of My Fair Lady in a regional theater, in a school, they will often use this key art.
Right, right.
I mean, it's really remarkable that here it is 60 years later, and it still sums up the play as well as
still,
anything.
Still the image of the show.
Exactly.
Yep.
He drew Julie Andrews. The first time he drew Julie Andrews was the year before to mark the 100th performance of a show called The Boyfriend.
Right, right.
And it's a wonderful drawing that it also has a tip to the hat to
John
Hirschfeld
Held.
History because of mm-hmm. John Held. Mm-hmm. He's got these sort of Heldites in the background.
Right.
And a year later, he would draw her in My Fair Lady.
In My Fair Lady. Wow. Just as a little young spring blossom or whatever it's called, spring chick. Now, Julie Andrews holds a record for the most drawn woman by Hirschfeld.
That is remarkable. How many times was she drawn?
That's a great question, David. I believe it was 54 times.
54 times.
Yeah, it's a lot.
That is a lot. So from 1955 until 2002, mm-hmm. she was drawn 54 times. Mm. And there's a reason for that.
Now, she does have somewhat of an advantage to this title that she holds, because there was a film called Star, and the producers commissioned Hirschfeld to do something like 25, 26 drawings for promotional materials.
Right. They actually commissioned 39 drawings.
39 drawings.
22, which featured, or 26 actually, which featured Julie Andrews. It was a fictionalized biopic of Gertrude Lawrence's life. Mm. They thought it was going to be a smash. I mean, Julie Andrews was a big star after Sound of Music.
Mm. What year was this? What year was Star?
Star was 68.
68?
She had been in Sound of Music and Mary Poppins, both really successful mm-hmm. films. So 20th Century Fox thought they had a guaranteed winner.
Right, right. And it turned out to be not a winner. Is that
a
correct?
Flop.
Yeah. And I read, I think, because she was kind of like a, how do we say this word,
she
David?
Was a bitchy music hall queen.
Exactly. And the world wasn't ready for Julie Andrews to be that.
I think that played a role. I think the era of the big movie musical was over.
Mm,
I think young audiences did not have an interest in that.
Yeah, by 68, I guess, really, it does kind of. There's Annie, but that's not really a big musical.
Oh, that Annie's not for another 10 years.
Yeah, no, I'm saying after 68, there's really not a lot of those big.
Right. It's just
fun,
you know,
musicals.
It's almost at like the apocryphal story in the 1930s and about 1930-31 with people coming to the box office and saying, you know, interested in the film and saying, "It's not a musical, is it?"
Right.
It was a little bit like that because the musicals that audiences wanted in 1968 were things like Hair.
Right.
The idea of Gertrude Lawrence singing music hall songs throughout her whole life and her career.
Not what the youngins are interested in.
Yeah, the press kit was in the shape of a performer's trunk. It was actual trunk. And they had these reproductions of playbills and programs and show posters. And they had these 39 Hirschfeld drawings.
Wow.
So
this is for Star. We're back on Star.
This
sorry,
is all
everybody.
For Star.
Yeah. So, we talked about a bunch in there. Didn't want people to get lost. Still on Star. So they obviously put a ton of money into all this promotional stuff between the Hirschfelds and the actual trunk and the reproductions.
Oh, yeah. They really thought they had a winner.
Yeah.
It flopped almost immediately.
Ugh,
they recut it and released it under a different name.
Oh,
and
no.
It also flopped. Ugh. So he did. I mean, he drew. He drew Julie Andrews in a lot of wonderful
roles. Oh, yes. She was in a lot of other things. My point was that out of the 54 times she was drawn, 26 of those were for Star. So that's a big little boost she has that no one else really does.
Right. I mean, Stan Laurel was...
Laurel and Hardy are up there. And for whatever reason, Stan Laurel has one more than Oliver Hardy.
And if you know where that Oliver Hardy drawing
still,
is, we'd like to
I'm
know.
I'm still doing the math on that. I'm not sure how that happened.
But, you know, Fred Astaire was drawn almost 50
Sinatra
times.
Was drawn a lot as well.
Right. And they did not have 26 drawings
dedicated to them. My on my short list of things to do, it's right at the top. My number one to-do list item, really, is to count the number of times that Perlman was drawn.
Oh, gosh.
Because
S.J.
Perlman, because I truly believe that he is the most drawn person by Hirschfeld.
Folks, we have a lot to do here at the Al Hirschfeld Foundation.
I'm very busy.
And we haven't gotten around to counting the Perlman's
drawings. Maybe I'll do that. We're getting off track here, but there are quite a few Perlman books that Hirschfeld illustrated.
Oh, yes, there's
and Perlman's in most of those pages.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, Julie Andrews definitely holds the record for the most drawn female. We can say that with confidence.
She was drawn 9 times in My Fair Lady.
Wow. Wow. Okay. And all of those on stage.
All of those on stage. She mm-hmm. famously did not appear in the movie version.
Right, right.
Sort of like Carol Channing not appearing in the movie version of Hello, Dolly.
I know. I'll never get over that.
I'm pretty sure Carol Channing never got over it.
Really? Oh, see, was that a... Did she want that? And
who wouldn't? That was
picked?
A major motion picture.
Oh, now I'm sad.
I tell the story, though. I contrast the story of Carol Channing and Barbara Streisand in the book.
Mm-hmm.
In the Hirschfeld Century book, because Carol Channing really... I mean, Hello, Dolly was an incredibly important role, and she had already been in several great shows. But Barbara Streisand had come out of sort of nowhere in 1962 with I Can Get It For You Wholesale.
Mm-hmm.
And
within
great
drawing
a few,
of that.
Great drawing. Hirschfeld, again, I tell the story in the book. Hirschfeld was at her audition for the show. He was great friends with Harold Rome, the composer of it. And within a few short years, she so dominates.
Mm.
And I talk about it through the lens of Hirschfeld drawings. You can see the drawings that appear. Mm-hmm. That by the time they make the Hello, Dolly film in the late 60s, she's the star of it.
Mm.
And it's not a bad film, but history is going to have a small hole in it because we don't have Carol Channing.
I think history remembers Carol Channing as Hello, Dolly as well.
Sure. Yeah. Although it's being rewritten right now with Bernadette Peters and Bette Midler.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're really significant dollies.
Yeah.
They're dollies for a new century.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Nothing, Carol, don't take it personally.
No, we love you, Carol.
We love you, Carol. Any event, so...
and she was also, I'm just looking here, she was also drawn twice in Camelot, Julie Andrews.
Right.
Which is also the other Lerner and Lowe musical
right.
of success.
Exactly. So. Yep. Exactly. In fact, we got a email from a fellow mm-hmm. who wanted us to identify a drawing. He was in a class. This is in the Midwest, and his professor would bring in things. That, it was a class about curating, and he would bring in a pile of things, and the students would each take something out of the pile and write like a museum label about it. And this fellow was contacting us because he wanted more information on this piece. It turned out to be Camelot, and it turned out to be the original drawing. Mm. And I told him it was quite valuable. When he said, how valuable? I said, well, that's, you know, like a $40,000 or $50,000 drawing. He wrote back to me that his professor was no longer going to be bringing
yes.
that piece in.
Please don't.
to really throw in a pile. She was also drawn in Mary Poppins twice.
Right.
Putting It Together twice. Mm. And I think this is very interesting. She was drawn in Victor Victoria 5 times.
Wow.
He drew her in the original film, mm-hmm. and then he drew her a number of times in the stage, the Broadway
interesting.
Adaptation.
Interesting.
So that's how you get to be drawn 54 times
yes,
by Hirschfeld.
Yes, yes. Well, she has a great career, and she's still going strong today.
Yes.
So
you go, great. Julie. one of the few performers who outlived outlived Hirschfeld.
Yes, no, that's very true. Very
you know,
true.
The whole, you know, Julie Harris had an incredibly wonderful career.
Yeah.
Long. Hirschfeld was working for decades before her,
yeah.
and worked for almost a decade after
wow.
her last Broadway appearance.
Yeah,
just really wild.
I pass her every day on my way to my kitchen. she's on my big 3 sheet of East of Eden. I have a soft spot for Julie Harris.
Now, Rex Harrison
yes.
was no shirker. He was drawn 28 times.
Which is still insane. I mean, I think we've talked about this before. Usually, if you type just a random name in the, you know, our kind of database of who's been drawn, it's usually between 1 and 4. Would
right.
you say that's the average
right.
number of times someone's been drawn?
And certainly the big stars like a Katharine
right.
Hepburn.
Right,
or
then you get into the,
Clark
you know,
Gable.
High teens, 20s. 28 is significant. That's quite a lot of drawings.
Well, that covers a more than 50-year period.
Wow.
You know, 1936 to 1989.
Wow.
He drew Rex Harrison nine times in My Fair Lady.
Same as Julie Andrews.
Right. but also drew him as Henry the Fourth, Henry the Eighth, Caesar. Yeah. He drew him twice in two different shows with Claudette Colbert. He drew Rex Harrison four times with his wife, Lily Palmer.
Oh,
that's Harrison's wife, not Hirschfeld's.
Oh, I did not know that. Yes, yes, yes.
One of, I think, the great drawings, certainly one of the great posters, theater posters that Hirschfeld did.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Called?
Bell, Book, and Candle. Is that the one you're talking about?
Exactly.
Yes, that is a great one.
And in that poster, he had a cat plays a very important role in it.
Is it a real cat on Broadway?
There was a real cat, I think, used on Broadway. Wow. But to be honest with you, I don't know.
Yeah.
You cat lovers out there.
Well, I know you're a cat person.
I live with cats. Yeah. Yes, I'm a cat housemate.
Yes.
It probably was a real cat.
Yeah.
But the cat in the show, I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but plays a significant role. And what Hirschfeld did for the poster was take a cat and a ball of yarn and let the yarn unspool so it made essentially drawings of Rex Harrison and Lily Palmer. Yeah, it's profiles of them in line.
Yep.
And it's so simple, yet you can tell right away who it is.
Really? See, I think Rex Harrison looks like Orson Welles in that one. Don't you see it? It's the big forehead, I think.
Rex Harrison had a big forehead.
You don't usually see it
because in Hirschfeld drawings, almost always Rex Harrison is wearing a hat.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
Interesting.
Well, because he frequently wore a hat. Maybe he was insecure about his hairline.
There's a lot of men that that happens to.
I'm not one of them. the first time he drew him, I just want to point this drawing out because I think it's a very unusual drawing, was in 1936 for a show called Sweet Aloes. Mm. And if you look at this drawing, first of all, it is, I mean, you can see Rex Harrison.
Yes.
I mean, he looks like Rex Harrison, but as a young man. And we, almost all of us, know him as a much older actor.
Correct, yes.
What I think is very unusual about this drawing is how abstract it is.
Yeah.
And how...
It's really nice.
His co-star in the drawing is John Emery. And Hirschfeld, I think maybe for the only time that I can remember him doing this, he has like a half a pyramid for a nose.
It's very, I mean, it's Picasso. But right. I almost want to say Covarrubias, too.
Well, the hair is Covarrubias.
Yes, it's very,
it's designed much more than character, although
much more.
It may be exactly what it was like.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think.
And he has given him this Jimmy Durante nose.
But unlike, it's all angular.
No. I'm just saying he's accentuated the nose, whereas he usually does not do that.
Right.
I mean, this is very out of the ordinary.
Very out of the ordinary. Yeah. So you should take a look at that drawing.
It's great. It's a great graphic drawing.
If you've never seen it before, you will be in for a surprise.
It's a treat.
Yeah. But, I mean, he drew him as at least two kings. And those are great drawings.
Yeah.
In one of them, he uses a dry brush technique. When he does the Henry VIII, there's a dry brush technique that is really great that creates his whole, what he's wearing, this sort of fur. And it's tremendous. Mm. And he drew him in a lot of wonderful plays, but also films.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first film that he drew him in The Happy Thieves with Rita Hayworth.
Yeah, I was just going to talk about this one. I love it. It's so, it's a little different. You get to see a sketch artist, Al Hirschfeld. It looks like I've never researched this film. I don't know anything about it, but I have a feeling that they're art thieves and they're swapping out the real art for facsimiles.
And the art in question is Velázquez's Rokeby Venus.
Yes, yes. And it's very good. I like it a lot.
If you want to see Hirschfeld do Velázquez, you have to look at this drawing.
And it's not, I mean, it's not Velázquez, but...
Diego, you have nothing to worry about.
No, yeah. He's not going to quit his day job. Oh, man. Okay.
But My Fair Lady, oddly enough, so Hirschfeld drew it, the original production, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great drawing he did for Collier's.
Oh, yes.
Which has Shaw sort of putting his arms around, and I think this is significant, Rex Harrison, Julie Andrews, and Moss Hart. I mean, that's how significant Moss Hart was in the making of My Fair Lady.
Now, was Hirschfeld friends with Shaw? It just seems that he has a real endearment towards him. The way he portrays him. Shaw. Okay, but they weren't like pals or anything like that. No, they were not pals,
although they would end up sort of looking the same.
They do kind of look the same.
Hirschfeld told a story. One day he was reading a magazine, and he reads this article on Shaw, and Shaw's asked, "You've lived a long life. What do you attribute your longevity to?" Mm. And as Hirschfeld explained it to me, Shaw said, "Well, you know, I don't eat red meat. I don't drink alcohol. I don't smoke cigarettes. I only drink milk. I exercise every day. And that's how you get to live a long life." And Hirschfeld thought that was really good advice. That was a great way to live a long time.
Yeah, those were all good tips.
Tips, exactly. Yeah. A few pages later, in the same magazine, there's an interview with Winston Churchill.
Oh, no.
And Winston Churchill lived a long life, mm-hmm. and they asked him what he attributed his longevity to. And he said, well, he smoked a couple of cigars every day, drank a fifth of brandy, and only ate red meat. And he never exercised.
Yep.
So
that's the secret to longevity, though. Yes. You know, you're good. And
I think Hirschfeld did sort of a mixture of both of those.
Yeah, yeah.
He was a Chinese menu of options.
And I think that's the correct way to do everything. It's all about balance. It's all about balance and everything.
But he admired Shaw, loved his plays.
I think it really shows through in the way that he chooses to, you know, place him in the drawings.
Sure.
And it just seems very endearing. And I would have guessed that they were friends, just the way that he draws him.
Well, like I said, I think there's a real honest-to-God affection and admiration for his work. Mm-hmm. In 2008, at the Shaw Festival in Niagara-on-the-Lake in Canada, we did a whole installation on Shaw by Hirschfeld. Mm-hmm. And it encapsulated a 72-year part of Hirschfeld's career.
Wow.
From the Chocolate Soldier.
That's a great drawing.
Yeah, and I think 1928.
Yeah.
All the way to, I think the last Shaw-related drawing was actually a drawing of Pygmalion.
Oh, wow.
From 1990 or 91.
Really?
There were a lot of drawings in between, a lot mm-hmm. of different plays, a lot of, obviously, there were several Pygmalions. There was a great one of Peter O'Toole.
Yeah. I wrote down Raymond Massey and Gertrude Lawrence.
Oh, yeah.
In 1945 at the Ethel Barrymore Theater. I saw that on Wikipedia when I was researching Pygmalion Productions, and that was a famous production of it. And I was like, wow, that is I would go see that.
Oh, yeah.
Raymond Massey and Gertrude Lawrence.
Great roles.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a production on Broadway right now of St. Joan.
Right.
I haven't seen it, but I want to see it because it's a great play. And if they do even a just competent job, you're getting something out of it. You know, it's like Shakespeare in a way.
Yes.
You know, you can get something out of almost any Shakespeare production, even the not great ones. So he of course, in the 50s, and it was on Broadway until 1962.
Wow.
Of course, I mean...
So that was a 6-year run?
6-year run, wow. Which doesn't sound so amazing today when, you know, shows... if you run 10 years, everyone
thinks... Well, back
then,
I guess it was Tobacco Road or Life with Father. Was
sure.
That in the lead?
Well, at one time, it was one of the longest running shows on Broadway, mm-hmm. Although it never reached...
My Fair Lady, you're talking about.
My Fair Lady.
Okay. Yeah. Now, I know Tobacco Road was one of the longest up until Fiddler, correct?
Well, Life with Father.
And Life with Father, yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
But today, the longest running American musical on Broadway is Chicago. It's been running for 21 years and shows no signs of letting up.
And by American musical, you mean written by Americans?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't want to get nationalistic or anything, but if you want to just look at the American musical. And
interesting.
It's arguable, but the stage musical, the Broadway musical, mm-hmm. is really an American creation.
Interesting.
You know, Europe gives us the operetta. Mm-hmm. It is really Broadway that gives us the musical that we know today.
Yeah, because when you said that, I thought of Phantom. But, of course, that was written by a British man. So it's not an American.
Andrew Lloyd Webber. Yeah. He's having a very good year this year.
Oh, he's always having a good year. so that's why I just wanted to clarify what you meant by that. So that's a good little trivia.
Actually, when I said that, when we were talking about how many times Rex Harrison and Julie Andrews were drawn in My Fair Lady, it's actually not true that they were both in each of the drawings, because Rex Harrison was drawn with Audrey Hepburn in the film version.
Yep.
Now, this was a drawing that was done to promote the film. It was not done for the New York Times. It was a drawing that appeared in publications all over the world to promote the film.
Right.
And it's great. And it was later published as a limited edition lithograph. It's a wonderful piece. It initially appeared in September of 1964.
Mm-hmm. And this is a Warner Brothers film, correct?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So, so it's very nice. Very, very nice. Very busy. Very busy.
Of course. I mean, it's the Ascot scene.
Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. And so he was drawing, he would draw the next big revival of My Fair Lady on Broadway was in 1976. It was the 20th anniversary production.
Mm-hmm.
And Ian Richardson, who had played, I think he played Doolittle in the original, was now playing Henry Higgins.
Oh.
And Eliza was played by Christina Andreas.
Mm.
And when that, Herschel did a drawing for the Times. When the cast album came out, they put that drawing on the cover.
Gotcha.
Keeping the tradition alive, as it were.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. It was revived again on Broadway in 1981.
Mm.
And this time Rex Harrison was back in it.
Wow.
It's
a long time. It's a long, it's a 64 to, what did you say, 91?
81.
Oh, 81. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Excuse me. 91, still a long time.
Alas, Rex wasn't appearing in anything other than his cemetery plot.
Oh, we'll cut that out. I'm sorry.
I don't know what the cast album looked like, but it did not include the Hirschfeld on the cover. Mm. And maybe that's why nobody remembers it.
Yeah, maybe. Could be. Could be.
The year after he drew the film of My Fair Lady with Rex Harrison and Audrey Hepburn, he drew Julie Andrews and Christopher Plummer in The Sound of Music.
Yes. One of my favorite movies.
Yes. As with many others.
I'm not alone in that.
arguably, maybe the most popular thing that Julie Andrews ever did.
I dare say.
In a career where she's done many popular things. Yes. That drawing was also drawn to promote the film and appeared in publications all over the world.
Right.
In 1967, while we're talking about films, he would draw Rex Harrison in Dr. Doolittle because that was the original Dr. Doolittle.
The guy who talks to animals.
If I could talk to the animals. Speak to the animals. Yes. Herschel did album cover art for that.
Yes. So this is weird. There's two Doolittles here. We've got Eliza Doolittle and we've got Dr. Doolittle.
Oh, I did not put that together until you said that. That is really amazing.
It is weird.
And strangely enough, they were the actual opposite of that. These were people who did much, not little.
Right. Doolittle. Oh, that's cute.
But there's no relation as far as I know.
No. I just thought
Eliza Doolittle are not related.
What a crossover.
Who would have thunk it?
Speech language therapy for dogs and cats.
Right. They both have to do with language.
Yeah, they do. Oh my gosh. We're really on to something
here. We may have found a hidden connection.
All right. This is moving to the top of my to-do list in front of Counting the Perlmans. Connecting the Doolittles.
Oh, fantastic. It might be the...
This might be my $1 million idea. This could be it.
I wouldn't...
Quit my J job?
Yeah.
All right, fine.
He drew Rex Harrison on television, actually.
Oh.
Rex Harrison appeared on Omnibus as Henry VIII.
Right.
And so the Omnibus was a program in the 50s on CBS. And actually, the last time he drew Julie Andrews was also television.
Mm.
This was Great Performance's 30th anniversary. And among the things that were included in this, which included many wonderful performers doing many wonderful things, was Julie Andrews performing Victor Victoria.
Right. Right, which he drew many times.
So that was, within a year, there'd be no more drawings.
Wow. Takes us all the way to the end.
Julie Andrews and Rex Harrison, I think his last Rex Harrison drawing, a wonderful portrait actually, was in 1989. Mm. Rex Harrison died not that long after that. So again, there's another performer who Hirschfeld had been working for 15 years before he drew his first Rex Harrison drawing, and he would work for another 12, close to 15 13, years afterwards. So, and that's and Rex Harrison had a pretty long career.
Right, right.
So I guess the question is, why are we talking about My Fair Lady today?
So usually we try to, choose our topics based on things that are happening. Yes. It doesn't always work out that way, but that's where we kind of start. And there's a new production of My Fair Lady. Is it open now at Lincoln Center?
It's in previews right now. Okay. It opens, I believe, April 19th.
Great.
At the Vivian Beaumont at Lincoln Center Theater.
Yep.
All indications are, all gossip in advance of it is that it's going to be a great production. Mm-hmm. And we're excited about it. I'm going to see it, in fact, this weekend.
My only hope is it doesn't have as much hype as Star. Because that will not be good. Good.
And if you go to the theater, there's I'm biased, there's a wonderful magazine in the lobby called the Lincoln Center Theater Review, which actually features Hirschfeld's drawing, original key art drawing, in a program, under a souvenir inside the magazine. But if you've never seen the Lincoln Center Theater Review, pick it up. It's a great issue. As I said, I'm biased because I've been the picture editor of the publication for 23 years. And it's a literary magazine that's different from any other theater magazine that you will pick up. So I want to do a shout out for that. Also, this spring, later in the month, in May, we are going to open one of our annual installations in the lobby of the Algonquin Hotel.
This has become a annual tradition since, 2014? Was that
our
first?
There's the tree at Rockefeller Center, and there's
the Hirschfelds at the Algonquin. Yeah. Yes. I know. I believe it started 2014.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So we've been doing this every year since 2014 with the Algonquin. This year's theme is My Fair Lady. Because was it written? Or no, it wasn't. Was it written at the Algonquin?
A portion of the show was written in a suite at the Algonquin.
They have a My Fair Lady suite?
They do have a
My Fair Lady. They have a Hirschfeld suite as well.
That's our favorite.
Yes, obviously.
You can find us there. Actually, you can find us in the lobby. If you've never seen one of the Algonquin lobby installations, you're in for a treat.
It's free.
It's completely free. You do not even have to, you just have to walk in.
Yeah, you don't have to sit down.
Although the seats are quite comfortable.
They are. I'll stay there all day. they are. It's a very, very nice space. But we put up huge reproductions, 3 foot, 4 foot reproductions.
3 feet high, sometimes 5 feet wide.
Yep, reproductions of Hirschfeld drawings all up around in the lobby. And this year's theme is My Fair Lady.
And so you'll get a chance to see a lot of those drawings. Mm-hmm. And you can see if you can guess everybody who's in the drawings.
Yep.
But there'll be a handout that will let you know. And that's going to run a good part of the summer, I think, to the beginning of August.
Yep.
We'll be celebrating Hirschfeld's birthday there, which is also becoming an annual tradition.
Yes, that was so much fun last year.
Yeah, we made up, we bought cupcakes. We didn't actually make them.
I didn't make cupcakes, but I did make little, what would you call those, picket pictures?
They were little flags of Hirschfeld drawings that we stuck in the cupcakes.
Put drawings on one side and I glued them to toothpicks and we passed them out. It was great fun. Everybody got to pick out their favorite. I, of course, got the What's My Line TV Guide cover cupcake.
I thought you got Duke McHale.
I saved the Duke McHale one too.
Yeah.
David got the Jerry Garcia one.
Always love
My husband got the John Lithgow cupcake. So it was a great time. It was a great time.
Pete and Will Anderson.
They played some music for us.
Played all throughout the lobby.
Yeah,
and
it was very nice.
When it was all done, we took the remaining cupcakes. Well, Catherine took the remaining cupcakes over to the Al Hirschfeld Theater.
Yep. Everybody was lined up for Kinky Boots. It was hot. So hot. I was sweating. And I passed out the cupcakes. And I said, it's Al Hirschfeld's birthday. And some people were a little confused. A street vendor got mad at me because I was stealing his business with my free cupcakes. But I kept on. We passed out all those cupcakes to people going in the Hirschfeld Theater.
We love to share Hirschfeld with people.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. It was a great time.
Yeah, so you can look for us wandering the streets. If you see somebody on June
21st. Now, this will be his 105th birthday, won't it? Oh, no, 115th?
115th birthday.
Okay, I was off 10 years.
Yes. But every year is a good year for Hirschfeld. Yeah. And so if you're in New York and you see a woman sweating walking down the street with cupcakes,
with Hirschfeld that's cupcakes, Catherine. That's me. Yep, always. It's probably only me. All right, let's wrap this up.
Okay.
What are we going to do here? I'm going to put all the drawings in the show notes so you can follow along. You can just click on there and you can see exactly what we're talking about when we talk in our little codes and you're like, what are David and Catherine talking about?
And you should look at those while you're listening.
Yeah.
It's a really illustrated talk, really.
And you can find all of our drawings at alhirschfeldfoundation.org. You can search whatever you would like.
Performer, production, publication, date, year, theater season, however you like it.
We're on Facebook, the Al Hirschfeld Foundation, Twitter and Instagram, at Al Hirschfeld.
And if you like the podcast, do us a favor.
Yes.
Rate and review us on Apple iTunes.
Yes.
Because believe it or not, that does help people find us.
I read reviews for other podcasts. So
right. And it helps in the recommendations.
Yep. Subscribe. And our podcast website is alhirschfeldfoundation.org/podcast. With an S at the end. What does S stand for, David?
Spain.
The rain
that's in
what
Spain
I,
yeah. falls mainly on
the plains.
That's
what I was trying to do, but it wasn't starting out correctly.
So you want to say that again?
No, that's fine. We'll just keep it that way. All right, everybody. Have a great week, and we will see you when we do.
So long.